Stories of Jesus which we find in the Gospels are retold for several reasons. They, of course, give us an insight into the amazing life and the amazing person of Jesus. However, these events in the life of Jesus also allow us to look on as he disciples his apprentices. This is also vital because as Jesus formed his disciples, so he will form us. In other words, these stories are for our formation as well. But not just for our formation as individual disciples, but our formation as a community of disciples. Not just individual disciples, but a community of disciples. These stories often are recorded to help us see what the church is meant to look like. Matthew 14 to Matthew 17 records six stories that have a future feel to them. It's as if they are looking beyond Jesus to the church he will leave behind. And over the next few weeks, we will look at these six stories, and I want to ask the question, how do these six stories help us as a church family navigate our way through these unique days? How do these stories not simply help us as individuals, but how do they help us as a church family, a community? Now, I'm going to ask the same questions of each story. Three questions. Here they are. What can we learn about Jesus? That's the first question. Here's the second one. What do we learn as we watch Jesus' disciples, his closest friends? And the third one, what lessons are there for us as a church? So those three questions I'm going to ask of all six stories over the next few weeks. But let's begin as we ask these three questions of the famous story of the feeding of the 5,000, Matthew 14, 11 to 21. So that first question, what can we learn about Jesus? And I'm thinking particularly of verses 11 to 13 now. As this very famous story begins, Jesus has intentionally withdrawn to a solitary place. Why? Well, because his friend and cousin, John the Baptist, has been cruelly killed by Herod. Perhaps in this withdrawing, Jesus is giving himself space to grieve. Some think that in John's death, Jesus has also seen something of his own future. So perhaps he's taking time out to reflect as well. Intentionally giving ourselves space to grieve and reflect is a vital life discipline. Don't feel guilty about giving yourself time to process the events life throws at you. Time to pray, reflect, be silent, process, even sleep. I'm really grateful for Patrick's talk last Sunday. It was lovely to hear his reflections on what life has thrown at him over the last 2 or 3 months. But Jesus' desire to withdraw is interrupted by the arrival of a large crowd. Perhaps you've had similar experiences. You've finally gone on holiday. You've set the out-of-office response on your email. Your mobile voice messaging tells people you're away for a week and here's who to contact. But one day you come back from the beach and you foolishly glance at your phone and there's a message from your colleague needing to speak to you urgently. In that moment, what do you feel? What do you think? Your withdrawing has been interrupted. On the last night of our break last week, Yvonne and I went to a restaurant and a young couple were sitting across from us who had a young daughter. And mum and dad were very clearly enjoying conversation, enjoying catching up, enjoying each other's company. But their daughter, playing on a nearby slide, kept interrupting, wanting them to watch every time she slid down the slide. The frustration and the interruption to mum and dad was obvious. I offered up a quiet prayer of thanksgiving that my kids are now 19 and 21 and generally don't play in play parks. What is Jesus' response to the interruption? Answer, compassion, verse 14. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, He had compassion on them and healed their sick. He takes his personal need for space, for silence, for solitude. He takes his frustration and his tiredness, and they are turned into compassion for the crowd. Please see this. He translates his sorrow for John, perhaps for himself, into sorrow for the crowd. Does Jesus have time for you? Is Jesus willing to be interrupted by you? Does Jesus see you and feel compassion? And the answer to those questions is, of course, yes, he does. Does he have time for you? Yes. Is he willing to be interrupted by you? Yes. When he sees you, does he feel compassion? Yes. Do you know, it's such a beautiful thing. Jesus is full of compassion. Compassion, if you like, is his default reaction. Jesus has compassion on the crowd, and as you come to him today, he has compassion on you. What an amazing and wonderful person Jesus is. No wonder he's worth following. That's the first question. What can we learn about Jesus? He's full of compassion, and he's full of compassion towards us. Here's the second question. What do we learn as we watch Jesus disciple his closest friends? And I'm looking at verses 13 to 17. Jesus' compassion has been caught by his disciples. Of course, this isn't the first time that they have seen Jesus' compassionate heart in action. There was that time he had seen a leper, and overwhelmed by compassion, he reaches out and touches the untouchable. Jesus' compassion is beginning to disciple his friends. His compassion is beginning to form them. And we see that because they notice that it's late. They notice that the crowd need food. And they respond. You see, compassion does that. Jesus helps us see outside of ourselves. That's part and parcel of what it means to be formed in the likeness of Jesus. And they come to Jesus not just with a problem, but they come to him with a solution. I have to say, those are the best sorts of disciples. Disciples who not only see a need, but also find a solution. And what's their solution? Verse 15, send them away to the nearest villages before the migru closes for the evening. They see a need, and they find a practical solution. What is Jesus's solution? Verse 16, you feed them. They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. Jesus agrees with what they saw, but has an alternative solution. One in which will require the disciples to get personally involved, to offer up their own meager resources, and trust that in the hands of Jesus that will be enough. You see, here's another dimension of being formed by Jesus. That Jesus perhaps agrees with what we see, but wants to offer an alternative solution. A solution that gets us personally involved. Now, we know how the rest of the story goes. Jesus takes the disciples' meager 5 loaves and 2 fish, enough for 2 people, 3 at most. He blesses them, and he divides the bread. The disciples receive back what they have offered to Jesus and begin to serve the crowd, giving it away. And verse 12, he tells us that over 5,000 are fed. But here's the thing. There are 12 baskets left over. There's more left over than there is at the beginning. Now, what can we draw from this in terms of our own discipleship? Well, if you follow Jesus, expect to be discipled. Expect him to form you, to train you as his apprentice. That's going to happen. Expect it. Here's another thought. If you follow Jesus, expect to be moved by the needs of others. This is in the family DNA. We will find ourselves becoming more compassionate people. Here's another thought. Our solution to people's needs may not be Jesus' solution to people's needs. So we need to learn to pray, listen, and wait for his direction. Praying, listening, waiting, to be led, again, is part and parcel of what it means to be a disciple. Here's another thought. Jesus may ask you to offer up your own resources as the solution to the problem. Your time, your energy, your gifts, your skills. Jesus may ask you to get personally involved. No outsourcing here. We roll our sleeves up. We get down and dirty. We may be the solution to the need. And here's a reminder that discipleship can be costly. Discipleship, here's another thought, discipleship will involve being stretched outside of our comfort zones. In this instance, being asked to meet a need without adequate resources. That's quite common when it comes to following Jesus. He doesn't seem to realize we have comfort zones. He likes to stretch us. Another thought, discipleship will involve facing our own personal fears. Discipleship can be scary. But perhaps if there's one thing about discipleship that we can learn from this passage is that above all, discipleship involves trusting Jesus. Without doubt, the multiplication of bread and fish is powerful and mysterious. Discipleship makes room for such possibilities, is open that Jesus might do something powerful and mysterious. And so we trust him. So this is a little picture for us of what it means to be formed by Jesus, to become his apprentices. He's forming us, he's making us, he's discipling us. Expect that. That's the second question. So here's the third one. What lessons are there for us as a church? Now, I'm thinking of us now as a community of disciples, not just individuals, but as a community knitted together. What lessons are there in this story for us as a church, particularly as a church navigating these strange and challenging days? Scholars believe that Matthew is writing his gospel to a church community under pressure. That perhaps the death of John the Baptist that begins this section mirrors the persecution this Christian community is experiencing. Maybe this church itself, the church that Matthew is writing to, has lost family members to imprisonment, or even worse. And that Matthew is recording the story of the feeding of the 5,000 to say something to a church facing challenging times. There are lots of thoughts that we could draw out of this, but I just want to pick out one as we come to a close. In this story, the needs of the crowd take precedence. Did you notice that? So, Jesus is tired, grieving and hurting. He's withdrawn, wishing for a solitary place. We all know what that's like. But then we read that he sees the crowd, has compassion on them, and heals the sick. The crowd takes precedence. Here's another thought. The disciples see the crowd, recognize their need for food. And in meeting that need, the disciples give up their food supplies for the crowd. The crowd take precedence. The miracle of multiplication is for the benefit of the crowd. They all get fed. And so here's the thought. There is always a crowd that needs to be served. Let's not lose sight of this calling on our life as a church family, that we exist for the crowd. I'm struck by the fact that the disciples' solution, at least the disciples' initial solution, to send the crowds to the local villages, was a convenient solution. They were outsourcing the solution to the local villages. But Jesus will have none of this. You feed them. See, our following of Jesus as a community, we may find ourselves having to get involved, rolling up our sleeves, no outsourcing, no delegation. It may be our faith that's been stretched. We may be the ones being pulled out of our comfort zones. Demands may be being made on our resources. The crowd is always with us. I felt stirred today as I was preparing this message to say to us as a church family, that we exist for the crowd. And let's say to the Lord today that we are ready to be inconvenienced, that our habits are ready to be disrupted, but the crowd will come first. Amen.